Welcome to the latest edition of Pass the Baton, a podcast to educate agricultural businesses and farmers on how to work through generational transfer of farms. Hi everyone, welcome to our latest podcast for Pass the Baton. My name's Tony Catt, Director of Catapult Wealth, and today we are talking all things Centrelink and social security and how this affects some of the farming community. I'm joined by Julie Steed from IWF. She's the Senior Technical Services Officer at IWF, and she's been with them for 15 years. Welcome, Julie. Thanks for joining us today. And I'm also joined by Christina. Christina is the Senior Paraplanner at Catapult Wealth. And Christina, this is her first time on the podcast, so we're really – it's actually Julie's first time as well, but we'll – Christina's first time on this as well, so forgive her if she's nervous. We'll make sure she's okay today. So today, for the farming community, Centrelink comes up a lot in the terms of how they think about their retirement, how they move forward through their latter stages of their life, and a lot, I guess, will be wondering what they're entitled to. They wonder how to access it. They wonder how they can maximise their entitlements. And there are some of the things that we really want to cover off on today. I guess in a really simplistic format, Christina, I might start with you. At its very basics, do you know, sort of, can you give some idea of how many assets you can have to get an entitlement to the Centrelink? So typically a farmer will be, you know, married. They might have some assets, but the farm has always been their majority of their asset. If we've got the basics, and if you're single, you own your own house, you can receive the maximum age pension if you've got how much? It's about 200 grand from memory.
Yes, it's 263,250 grand.
Yeah, and so below that, they can get entitlement to the full age pension. Yeah. If you're single, what limit then does it cut out at?
$572,000.
Yeah, okay. For the sake of, before we move on then, in terms of things that are counted towards that, like bank accounts and things like that, can you just, what's a quick list of things that they can, that'll count as assets?
Okay, so all financial assets, so bank accounts, superannuation, that's in accumulation, doesn't get counted, but anything in account-based pension does get counted. Things like your primary residence aren't counted, but things like investment properties,
term deposits,
non-financial assets, things like that all count towards the assets test.
So clients who have, typically my farming clients have a caravan, some of them have a plane, those things will count?
Yes.
Yeah, and I guess they'll value it, they can't just make up the number, can they? Or they have to, there's some sort of system, they have to be relatively close to their value.
100%. Centrelink are very stringent on asking for source documents. So they want to see bank statements. They want to see details of everything, like your investment properties. They need to verify it with something in the background. So they will request that information when applying for the age pension.
Beautiful. At this stage, and I've got lost in terms of what age now, because there's been so many transition rules over the years. Approximately what age can you start applying for the age pension? Because I think it's 67, isn't it? 67 and a half?
It depends the year that you're born. So at the moment, it's anywhere between 65 to 67.
Yeah, okay. And it's the same for men and women, or there's a slight difference, isn't there?
Yeah, well, it depends on the year that you're born. But it's the same.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned one point, and sorry to stay on this topic. You talk about superannuation not counting if it was in accumulation mode. So that's a pretty important point. I just want to drill down in from a planning point of view, because sometimes you have an older, I'm going to be stereotypical here, but I think it could be an older husband with a younger wife. And it could be just a matter of 3 or 4 years difference between the couple.
Yeah.
It can be something to take into consideration, isn't it? So that potentially if the husband turns 67, the wife might be retired at 63. If she leaves her assets, her super fund, in accumulation mode, even though she might be entitled to move it to pension mode, her super fund doesn't count towards the assets test. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And that's where there's opportunities we can explore to potentially do a recontribution strategy, withdraw his account-based pension out and contribute it into the wife's name, and then essentially hide or shelter all from Centrelink. Yeah. So those are some potential strategies to look into. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't just leave them hidden though forever. I think is it as soon as they hit 65, that they just automatic, regardless of whether they're in accumulation or pension, they're automatically counted as an asset.
Yes.
Okay. So that's important to understand. Yeah. In terms of then married couple, they get a higher allowance. So the minimum's higher from memory. Do you know what, off your top of your head, Christina, what that minimum is for a married couple?
Do you mean...
For the assets test.
Oh, the assets test, yes. So it's $394,500. So that's the cutoff to get the full pension.
Yep.
And if you have, you can have higher assets than that, but the cutoff then will be $860,000.
Yeah, no, beautiful. I love tongue twisters as well. And ultimately, above that number, you don't get any age pension at all.
Yeah, gets cut off.
And I know, Julie, I'll probably turn to you. I reckon it used to be around $1.2 million, that number, didn't it, a couple of years ago,
yes, certainly. That's the assets test thresholds have come down and the taper rates have increased as well. So it is certainly, you know, something that we're seeing less and less people being able to access. And it's a really, really simple thing for governments to change.
Yeah.
And so just, you know, tweaking those thresholds. We had a lot of people that had major changes in 2015, and we saw a lot of people actually lose access to any types of benefits. There were some concessions with grandfathering of the healthcare card, which is something that a lot of people find really, really
useful.
Valuable.
Yeah.
Yes, but apart from that, you know, it is a really easy thing for governments to change.
And they have.
Yes.
It did put a lot of people in some awkward spots. And the importance of this strategy in this day and age with interest rates now at next to zero is really interesting. Some people have relied on topping up their income via term deposits, typically at 5, 6, 7%, with now interest rates at less than 1%, if not zero, moving forward. Centrelink strategies in terms of generating an income stream to live off are going to become crucial, I would suggest.
Absolutely. And I don't know about you, but, you know, I had a high interest bank account.
Yeah.
And I checked recently and it's 0.01%.
Something.
0.01%. Not even, you know, 0.1%, 0.01%. And that's a high, high deposit. So for a lot of people, we're even earning the deeming rates at, you know, 0.25 is difficult.
Mm.
And, you know, so a lot of people just don't have those opportunities.
You mentioned a really good point, which is on my list here, Julie, to talk about is deeming. I think just for the sake of the audience, do you mind explaining how the deeming works? And if you know the rates off the top of your head, that'd be great.
The deeming actually is a really good thing. And it's one of the areas that is simplified.
Yes.
And it's designed to encourage people to earn whatever they can on their financial investments.
Yes.
So Centrelink doesn't care what you actually earn.
No.
They just apply a deeming rate. So the current rate is 0.025, so 0.25%, up to about 60,000. So for a single person, up to about, say, 52,000, for a couple, just over 86,000. And so then above that, it's now still 2%.
Mm.
And so, you know, again, getting more than 2% on over 80,000 is really quite a stretch for a lot of people in more conservative investments.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, that can be really quite problematic for people in terms of drawing an income. And that's, you know, a lot of people looking back to their superannuation, where we'll tend to find, you know, better returns, you know, but over the longer term.
So the deeming becomes crucial because we talked about the asset test limits before, but the income test limits are also there too, and that's where the deeming cuts in. A lot of times farming clients will continue to work on the farm. They're still involved with trusts and things like that, and they still work until they die, basically, some of my farming clients, they'll work out there. What does come up in conversations is how much income are they allowed to earn to be able to even continue to get the maximum Centrelink amount? And sorry, just on that topic as well, was not only much do they get in cash, But some of them use distributions via a trust to themselves. And so they, a lot of the sons, I'll call it using mum and dad as a bit of a tax dodge, allocate the money through the trust. Do you know which how much they can earn before they would jeopardise their Centrelink?
Yeah, so for a single person, it's $178 a fortnight.
Yep.
So and that completely phases out when you earn more than $2,066 a fortnight. So, but that full pension at under $178. And for couples, it drops down to $158 each, so $316 collectively.
And a fortnight.
A fortnight.
Yeah.
And then completely phases out when, as a couple, you earn more than $3,100.
Okay.
So, you know, if you look at that $178 for the full pension includes all types of income, so it'll be your trust distributions, any other financial
bank accounts, yeah,
and you know, deeming.
Yes.
But then there is also a work bonus, a pensioner work bonus,
yes,
which allows you to actually earn the first $300 a fortnight that actually comes from being employed or being self-employed,
yeah,
can actually be exempt.
Okay.
And it actually gets even better than that because you can bank up to the full year's worth of $7,800 if you don't earn income in a particular year. So even if, let's say, you were earning $200 a fortnight,
yes,
you can still bank that spare $100.
Yes.
So in the next year, if you
can catch it up,
had a larger trust distribution,
yeah, okay,
then you could use your $178,
yeah,
to actually, you know, use the trust distribution there. And then if you might have, I don't know, we've had some bumper crops this year.
Yes, yeah.
So, you know, if you were working longer hours because, you know, there was just more
yeah,
to harvest,
yeah,
then you could utilise that or what you hadn't previously used, you know, in a previous year. So that can be really valuable.
So that's not age dependent or anything. So that's $7,800 and that's each for mum and dad?
Yeah, yes, yep. So but you do have to be of age pension age.
Yeah, okay. Yep. So as long as you're age pension
going
age.
Forward,
yeah,
67.
And but there's no cutoff. You could be 90.
Exactly.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it wouldn't affect. So in a sense then, if you are working and you earn that $7,800, let's just say, Julie, Is the other amount per fortnight added then on top of that? Is that
yes.
So they'll exempt that first $7,800.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, it's good to know, and I think it's important because a lot of people will earn maybe a full Centrelink pension and need to top up their income for various lifestyle needs or demands and to pay bills and having that extra amount of money coming in can be crucial. If you were a couple on the full age pension, just talking then all things Centrelink, what are you entitled to at the full age pension these days? I haven't looked at it for a while. Is it much?
No. Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, you know, when my ex-in-laws retired off the farm, you know, it was $18,000 for a couple.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's ridiculous. What could two people possibly spend $18,000 a year on? But for a single, it's about $24,000,
yes,
so just on $500.
Which is non-taxable, of course.
Yes, yep, yeah, which is also good.
Yeah.
And it's about the $38,000
for the full wage pension. Yep. Yeah, and it's interesting in this day and age, $38,000, to put that into context, when you put it into context of Julie's interest rate experience, people to generate $38,000, you'd need in term deposits. I don't know, in 0.011 or whatever you said, Julie.
Exactly.
You need a lot of money to generate $38,000.
Yes.
So getting access to some of this money can help supplement a lot of lifestyle needs. And as Julie mentioned, there's the bonus there with the $7,800 can come quite in handy.
And that's another thing where you talk about, you know, having trust distributions.
Yeah.
You might want to make sure that mum and dad were working for $300 worth of a fortnight, so actually be employees,
yes,
of the trust,
yeah,
for that period, and then distributions come from other things.
Yeah.
And as you said, there's always plenty of work to be done. You just can't get rid of them.
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that it really leads well into another topic is that a lot of farming clients, they're very asset rich, and a lot of them are relatively income poor with these sort of entitlements to Centrelink stuff. The importance of thinking ahead, Christina, there's a there's a rule around for gifts, and you have a certain time frame where if you want to handle the farm on to the next generation, that'll be considered an asset. Can you just walk us through how long that is? It's 5 years. Is it 5 years? I think from memory, you've got to, if you hand over a gift to the the farm to the next generation.
Yeah.
Because you're allowed $10,000 per annum.
Yes, that's right. Or you've got a rolling amount as well. I think it might be $30,000 over 5 years.
Correct.
So if you want to gift assets to your children, it's good to do some Centrelink planning a few years before retiring, and maybe 5 years before retiring, to make sure that you're gifting them well before those 5 years, so that they can
plan ahead.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because it's really about working backwards, isn't it? About saying that, well, if you're going to get the age pension at 67, and that's what you think is going to be crucial to your retirement planning, you need to work back 5 years from there to say, well, what do we need to do now so that at 67 it kicks in on the dot? And and for a number of clients, and I guess it's probably a lesson to learn for a number of clients, is that if you start leaving it you're planning and you're gifting, if you need to do this around for too long, it means that effectively the farm has to supplement mum and dad's retirement lifestyle, not Centrelink in a sense. So, even as Julie said, at $38,000, it's nothing to sneeze at. Mm. And if it's $38,000 that's coming out of farming cash flow to pay mum and dad's bills, instead of Centrelink paying for it, that could have been avoided should you planned earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Just while we're on the topic then, I guess I come across there are two major assets that we talk to farming clients about with this, is that you've got the land, which sits in a number of different trusts or can sit in dad's name, mum's name, joint name, and ultimately they all count towards their financial assets, their business assets, and some of these farms can be worth $5, $10, $15 million. So they well exceed, what do we call it, the $857,000. So for as long as those assets are in their names, they will count. That's one problem. The second problem that a lot of the farming clients have is that they have what we call an operating asset. So what they run their machinery through, their sheep through, they have their profit loss all through, and ultimately they can be run through another vehicle which they're the beneficial owner of as well. So giving away the land or gifting the land to the next generation is one problem, but making sure you've got a handle on giving over the trust or the operating vehicle is another, because although it may have debt in it, or although it may have sheep in it or cattle or machinery, sometimes those things can add up. Machinery, we all know a header and some machinery on a balance sheet could easily be plus $1 million. And so you have to be careful about gifting some of those assets too late, just thinking, oh, I've got the land dealt with, and forgetting about the rest of it. And Julie, I guess I'll ask you, is that handing over some of these assets, because they're in different forms, you have to be very careful about how you hand them over, don't you? I mean, be through trusts and personal names and things like that. It's not just as simple as saying, here's, get a conveyancer in and swap it over.
Absolutely. And Centrelink will, go back and look, and not just look at the legal structure, but look at what actually happens.
Yeah.
So when they attribute an asset to you, and again, mostly Centrelink with assets in a trust, they'll look at what was the source.
Yes.
So if I was the original contributor of the header into, that trust or that operating account, then that's an asset of me.
Yes.
And that will continue to be, attributable to me until such time as it changes hands.
Yes.
So if I change control of the trust, then obviously you need, conveyancing to come and do all of that. But you still actually have to have a situation where mum and or dad don't control the trust. And, like you said, with many instances, handing on to the next generation is where I sign the paper, but I will still be in control because it's still my farm. Right, everyone?
Yeah.
We all understand. You won't try new methodologies and do whatever. You'll just do it the way that I've done it, and that's how it will be.
Yeah.
And so, we see this very much with Centrelink. They want to see copies of minutes of trustee decisions. They want to see copies of meetings and things like that. Who actually, was the decision maker?
Yeah.
and those sorts of things. So it's really important to keep those records.
Yes.
And don't believe that Centrelink won't come and ask for this detailed information, because they absolutely will.
Be prepared.
Yes.
It's and handing over that control is easier said than done for some
absolutely.
Of the farmers, and which I completely understand too. So trying to aim for Centrelink entitlements is great, but are you prepared for that control change? And it's just an underlying issue that a lot of clients don't like, and understandably so. I have a number of clients that will retain a block, 1,000 acres or something, as a backup plan in case anything goes wrong in their life. You know, their superannuation will go through another pandemic and their share portfolio falls 40% or something like that. But they do that knowing that, well, that might stop them from getting a Centrelink entitlement. So there's pros and cons of all these decisions.
Yes, yep.
In terms of then moving them on, obviously there's tax consequences, Julie. And I know that the three of us aren't tax accountants, so I won't get too bogged down on that. But it's pretty important to get tax advice, isn't it?
Absolutely imperative. Yeah, and particularly, you know, where there are interposed entities, other trusts, operating structures, because... You know, one of the things that I find, particularly from an estate planning point of view, is that there's this assumption that dad owns everything.
Yeah.
And in fact, invariably, dad actually owns nothing.
No.
And so understanding the difference that tax makes to those structures is also really important. So working with, you know, the family accountant becomes really, you know, really valuable. So working with the advisor and the accountant together can really add value.
Absolutely. And talking then, and these things can all be done, and that's why getting advice is crucial, and understanding what the pros and cons of some of these things are, is that it's the on costs, it's the little things that you don't see, it's the stamp duty potential costs. You've got to be careful of even GST issues. You need to be careful of hidden things. There's nasty traps in times of moving machinery around with written down values for depreciation. And all these little traps, I'm going to say, you need to be very careful of, because you don't want nasty surprises by chasing, you know, $30,000 worth of Centrelink income. You don't want to blow up $200,000 worth of tax in the meantime. So
absolutely. And it's you know, sitting there with the whole understanding of, you know, what all the domino knock-on effects are, and things that, you know, unfortunately sometimes we see people have been cute in the past for primarily tax purposes, and then, you know, without thinking far enough down the track in terms of what's the long-term goal you know, for these assets.
Yeah.
And, you know, can get some fairly nasty tax bills. But stamp duty is a huge one as well.
Yeah. And look, and there are some good exemptions for farming clients.
Yes.
And they've got to be – and one of the things I often say to clients is don't just assume there is a problem here. There are some great exemptions. There's some great ways of moving some farming assets around. Explore it. Ask the questions. See what can be done. See what can't be done. But don't just rule it out. Go and get the right advice and see what you can do, because there is some smart ways of doing these things. Julie, just while we're on the topic then, one of the things that is part of the Centrelink regime, I'll call it, is a thing called foregone wages. Well, I've come across it in my career a few times. I'm sure that you've probably seen it a few times. The gist of it is such that someone on the farm could be being, because they're not drawing at a market wage, I think is the gist of it, that they could be then entitled to moving some assets around later in life as it's, and it effectively dodges Centrelink testing. Can you explain a little bit about how that works?
Yeah, sure. So the concession is that if I'm transferring an asset, a farm asset, to the next generation, and those people have worked on the farm for underpaid wages, then the value of that underpaid wage is not counted for gifting purposes.
Yes.
So I could gift an asset and take off the underpaid wages. You can also take off any other contributions that they might have had. So if my son paid for the new cattle yards, then, you know, that isn't gifting, that's what he contributed. But the way the foregone wages is calculated, it uses average weekly ordinary time earnings at the date of farm transfer. So that's about $75,000 per annum at the moment. So you bring that back to an hourly rate. And that's the wage that is used. So you don't actually have to think about all of the hours, you know, and what the average wage was at that time.
Yeah.
But you do, it is advisable to have some record keeping in terms of hours worked.
Yes.
Now, again, your average farming client doesn't turn off.
No.
You know, they're always on duty. If something breaks, it's got to be fixed. It doesn't matter. There's no clock on, clock off, you know, 9 to 5.
Mentality, yeah.
So, you know, keeping records, and again, a lot of farming clients aren't great at all the record keeping when it's within the family, because it's just that level of trust is always there and it doesn't matter. But you might have a situation where, let's say the going rate was, you know, $400 a week, and you've been receiving $100 a week. So they'll say, okay, well, you've been paid a quarter, and so you can use the foregone test of three quarters of whatever that wage is.
Yeah.
There's also, you have to have, there's a mandatory allowance of 20% of any amount over $10,000. That is a notional tax amount. And then you also have to take off another 10%, which is notional board and lodgings.
Yeah, okay.
So they have
some
to come down.
Yeah.
Yes, but, you know, keeping records is again, really valuable. And even if they're rough, you know roughly how long you're working at different seasons.
Yeah.
So,
can be, I found it quite useful to have up your sleeve, particularly if you've missed that 5-year window and you're trying to get access for a client to some Centrelink benefits quickly. You can use the foregone wages avenue potentially to try and escape some gifting issues and the 5-year issue. The other issue that comes up, Julie, is the primary residence. Quite often, I'd probably say 70 to probably 90% of the time, the mum and dad live on the farm. They live on a title that might be 500 acres sometimes, and it's been sort of co-used as a house and a farming activity. Quite regularly, mum and dad want to stay on the farm, which is completely understandable, and they want to stay on the farm for a long period of time. That they sort of approach it that they want to stay on the farm, but they don't obviously farm anymore. And so why should this 500 acres or 1,000 acres be counted as an asset for us? Is there a way around that?
There is one. So it's called the extended land test, and it's got two components. The first is that you have to have a 20-year continuous attachment to the land.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, for a lot of our retiree farming clients, they have lived on the same title for, you know, the 20 continuous years.
Mm.
It does have to be a single title, so you look at that. But if you've got that 20-year continuous attachment to the land and the land is being used to its full potential but not by you, then, and that could be either the next generation are taking it on or you've got a share farmer in, then the entire amount of that title can be exempt. So normally you're only allowed to have up to 2 hectares, so roughly 5 acres, as, you know, the house paddock, if you like. And so if I lived on a 10-acre block, I could only have, you know, 2 hectares being counted as my primary residence. The rest is an asset and it's valued. And importantly, with anything over that 2 hectares, it's actually valued by a Centrelink valuer.
Yes.
You can't just pop down to your local friendly elders bloke and
ask him to do it.
You know, and get a favourable valuation. It will be a Centrelink valuer who comes out to do that.
Yeah.
So 20-year continuous attachment to the land and it's being productively used to its capacity, then the entire value of the title can actually be exempt from an asset.
Hmm.
But so, you know, if you're looking at an upper threshold of for a couple of 876,000, most 5-acre, you know, 500-acre properties would be well in excess of that.
Yeah.
So being able to exempt the entire amount can be a really valuable concession.
Yeah, absolutely. And it then solves the other problem I was alluding to earlier about the parents keeping control of an asset that they then have as a backup plan in case they have to go into aged care or various things in terms of just maybe something they can sell to the next generation. Yeah, Julie, I think it's a really good point and is something that probably not a lot of people are aware of, I would argue, and can potentially help some people out manage what's going forward. The other big one that we come across is just simply people saying, Tony, we understand we're probably over the assets test. We may not be entitled to age pensions, but are there any other concessions that I can get in terms of other? And so there's Commonwealth senior cards and healthcare cards. How do they get them? Is it straightforward walk in? Can you get them with any amount of assets? Or because I'm pretty sure that they, as a couple, they needed to have less than, it's about $86,000 worth of income to get their health care card. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So the Commonwealth Seniors Healthcare Card is income tested. So they don't look at your assets. It's just your income as a couple. And that includes any employment income. And then they call it an adjustable taxable income, I believe.
Yeah.
So they look at all your sources of income together. And if you are below their threshold, then you should be entitled to the Commonwealth Seniors Healthcare Card.
So that with that Seniors Healthcare Card, getting entitlement to it, so as long as you're $1 below, there's no fade-in or fade-out mechanism with that. It's either you're entitled to it or you're not.
Yeah.
And you looked at as a couple, if you are in a couple situation. That's where the deeming also becomes pretty crucial, isn't it? So if you've got $1 million in superannuation, they deem it, I think you said before, at about 2.5%.
Depending on what bracket it falls under, it's either 1.25 or 3.25. The numbers are always changing to adjust for the economic climate. But yes, so the income is deemed so it doesn't matter what your investments
are
actually
earning.
Earn. It's just deemed to earn a certain amount.
Yeah, great.
And for the Commonwealth Seniors Healthcare Card, that one's is, as you said, the adjusted taxable income. So what you actually earn will get counted in there rather than deeming. The deeming will just apply to account-based pensions.
And those healthcare cards and can for people looking for some discounts on some health, some medical stuff, and that they. From all reports that they can add up for people in different wanting different things, so it can be quite useful. In terms of then going forward, you know, if you're in a couple relationship with some, you might be on an age pension. It sounds like there's still a reasonably significant difference between the $38,000 limit and the $24,000 limit. I think you said if you're on a full age pension, going from a couple to a single. I assume some people like that. I was just thinking about it then when you were saying it. If one person dies in a relationship. You take a $14,000 a year pay cut straight away by the sounds of it.
It's actually a bit worse than that as well, because on the death of the first of you, all of the assets of the couple become the assets of the survivor.
Okay. Yeah.
So in many, many instances, that will put you as a single person, even though you have a higher threshold, it's likely to result in you having no entitlement anyway because of the assets.
Of the way it's joined together.
Yes, yeah.
And I think that, look, and the lesson learned there, a lot of clients, when they're looking at their succession planning and their savings plans is aiming for Centrelink is not all it's cracked up to be, and making sure that you've got clear plans in place to manage your income in an appropriate way and a sustainable way so that you can maintain a lifestyle that you want through retirement. I suppose, you know, and I've heard it before and I'll probably hear it again, is that I've paid taxes all my life and I want my fair share of Centrelink income because, you know, that's what they owe me sort of mentality. Great. Okay, that's fine. And I'm the first one to sit there and go, okay, well, how do we work through this? But I think you sometimes have to be careful what you wish for. And this some of this area has a lot of landmines in it, particularly with farming clients, as we've talked about today. Shifting assets around can be difficult. It can be have hazards around tax and stamp duty and GST and a lot of other things. But it has to be thought about sooner rather than later is probably the easiest way to put that. Is there any other Centrelink issues, Julie, that you've come across that we haven't covered off on today that you may think might be relevant to any of the farming community?
No, my only other thing would be if you are engaging with Centrelink, the best way to do it is via MyGov.
Yes.
And so I know a lot of people don't like MyGov, but it really will save you a lot of time and heartache.
Yeah.
And we've certainly seen periods during, you know, COVID when all hell broke loose literally with JobKeeper and JobSeeker, where the only processing that was being done was for those applications that were being lodged electronically. And so there are not a lot of Centrelink offices in regional areas either. You know, it's not like just popping down to the, you know, local store. So often there's, you know, significant travel involved. So, you know, if it is something that you're considering, we would really encourage you to get some help and get a MyGov account.
Yeah, no, I agree. Thank you to you both for coming in today and talking about it. I'm sure that we've raised some interesting points for those listening out there that, and the important thing is to have some conversations about it, you know, raise the issues, talk about, do an audit of what do you own, what do you owe, you know, is this something worth shooting for or not, and get onto it really quickly and get some good advice. So thanks, Julie. Thanks, Christina, for coming in today, and I really appreciate your time and effort. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us.